Welcome to today's edition of the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. In addition to feature reports, I'll bring you a look at regional and national agricultural news. And the show starts with a look at California agricultural news.
Early registration for the 2024 Crop Consultant Conference, hosted by Progressive Crop Consultant Magazine and Western Region Certified Crop Advisors, is now open. The popular event for certified crop advisors, pest control advisors, grower applicators, and industry professionals is the mainstay for all continuing education needs this year and will take place on September 25th and 26th at the Visalia Convention Center. Visit myaglife.com/events for the early discounted rate of $275 per person, which includes the live conference, a trade show with 70 plus exhibits, first class dining, entertainment, and a mixer. We'll see you there.
Nature Ripe, a farmer-owned producer and marketer of berries and avocados, has begun its California organic strawberry season with promotable volumes expected in May. The Santa Maria and Salinas Watsonville districts are off to a slower start due to the cooler weather, but they are optimistic about the upcoming organic strawberry season, according to Brian Vertrees, Nature Ripe's Director of Business Development. He said the significant rainfall this winter has been beneficial, refreshing the soils and energizing the plants. With favorable weather conditions this spring and summer, they anticipate excellent size and flavor from Santa Maria and Salinas Watsonville. Nature Ripe has just started harvesting its California organic strawberries in Watsonville and Santa Maria, which will have production through October and December, respectively. In mid-April, the company's Salinas-grown organic strawberries will become available with a season that extends through November. In terms of notable volumes, Vertrees says Nature Ripe's first organic peak from Santa Maria typically begins in late April and extends through the first 3 weeks of May. Concurrently, production in Salinas-Watsonville will also increase during this period. Although it won't reach peak volumes yet, it will start off strong. The peak in the north regions is expected to occur from late May through the first week of July. He says small promotions should kick off in early May, followed by a robust push throughout June to optimize crop timing. Vertrees noted that demand for organic strawberries as well as other organic berry varieties has increased steadily over the past several years. He says millennials and younger consumers are an essential demographic for organic strawberries, driving market growth. These shoppers prioritize not only the ingredients in their food, but also its environmental impact. Organic farming aligns with many of the criteria that guide consumers' decision-making processes, making it an appealing choice for this group. The California Cotton Ginners and Growers Association's president and CEO Roger A. Isom spoke to the Senate Ag Committee recently as a panelist at a committee hearing entitled Navigating Threats to California Agriculture, continuing the discussion. Speaking on behalf of not only the California Cotton Ginners and Growers Association and the Western Agriculture Processors Association, but also the Ag Energy Consumers Association, of which he chairs the board. Isom was one of five panelists that addressed everything from SGMA and water to energy, land use, and pesticides. He focused on the impacts of the state's efforts to address climate change and how the shortage of electric infrastructure, skyrocketing electric rates, and the high cost of new electric equipment will make California agriculture even more non-competitive than it is today. Isom opened his comments by stating that California is headed for a train wreck. Agriculture in California is doing these things to address climate change, and the state is not ready. He says they don't have the infrastructure. They already pay the highest electric rates in the country, and they cannot pass along the cost to pay for the new infrastructure or the new equipment. Senate Ag Committee Chair Melissa Hurtado thanked Isom for his comments and thought the hearing was important for the legislature to hear the concerns. The Dairy Council of California, a leader in nutrition education and advocacy, announced the release of a culturally responsive resource to support infant and toddler nutrition for Hispanic families. Feeding Infants and Toddlers, Highlighting Hispanic Heritage Foods, was produced with $10,000 in project funding from the National Association of County and City Health Officials under the Reducing Breastfeeding Disparities Through Continuity of Care project, which is funded by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Collaborating with dietitians and nutritionists that work with the Hispanic community, Dairy Council of California served as lead consultant to coordinate development of the critical resource. The Lynn Cove Research and Extension Center is playing host to a Citrus Trips Field Day. The field day will be on Thursday, April 9th from 9 to 11 a.m. The day is geared towards teaching scouts how to recognize the various life stages of citrus thrips and western flower thrips. The course will also cover how to monitor citrus thrips and management strategies. It will include a PowerPoint presentation that will showcase citrus thrips identification, natural enemies, insecticides for citrus thrips control, treatment thresholds, and treatment choices for thrips management. There will also be discussion on the current status of delegate resistance in citrus thrips and mitigation measures. Continuing education credits are available. For more information and to register, contact California Citrus Mutual. Based in San Jose, ZAG Technical Services, an IT consulting firm specializing in cybersecurity, data analytics, and managed services in the agriculture and food and beverage industries, recently received 3 awards for its contributions to agriculture in the technology space, according to a company news release. Last month, CRN Magazine named ZAG a managed service provider Pioneer 250, adding ZAG to its MSP 500 list. The MSP 500 list recognizes top technology providers and consultants whose forward-thinking approach to providing managed services is changing the landscape of the IT channel, according to the release. It was ZAG's 6th consecutive year on the MSP 500 and 8th appearance overall. In February, ZAG was also named to the Cloud Tango's MSP Select list as a top managed service provider. MSP Select honors companies in the U.S. that deliver technical excellence and innovation that exceed customer expectations. This was ZAG's 3rd consecutive year on the MSP Select list. And finally, for its inaugural Hybrid Solution Provider 250 list, Channel Insider, a technology advice brand, recognized ZAG as one of the most progressive IT solution providers in North America based on its commitment to advanced technologies and client success. To be considered an HSP, a business must continue to adapt to changes in customer consumption requirements, complexity in emerging technologies, and stakeholder approval, with the ultimate goal of becoming a better partner for its clients. ZAG says its efforts to optimize and secure the food supply chain are more than a mission, saying that they understand this industry well and the challenges facing today's grower-shipper, including labor shortages, resource scarcity, small margins, and cyber threats, according to ZAG CEO Greg Gatzke. He says technology plays a big role in helping agriculture alleviate those pain points. Researchers at the University of California, Santa Barbara, University of British Columbia, and University of Colorado Boulder have discovered that organic farming significantly affects the amount of pesticide used in neighboring fields. The study, published in Science, found that the impact depends on the density and spacing of organic and conventional fields, and clustering organic fields together could provide the most benefits for all farmers. They find that organic cropland generally leads to a decrease in pesticide use on nearby organic fields, according to lead author Ashley Larson, an ecologist at UCSB's Bren School of Environmental Science and Management, saying, in contrast, organic agriculture leads to a small but significant increase in pesticide use on nearby conventional fields. The authors suspect that the different responses reflect different reliance on natural pest control methods, although they admit the mechanisms are difficult to test with their data. There's been a push to increase organic production in the U.S., which begs the question of how this will affect pests and pest control for other farms. Most pesticide studies have focused on a field level, Larson said, comparing metrics like biodiversity, soil health, and pesticide use between organic and conventional fields. However, agriculture pests and their predators move beyond field boundaries, so the group sought to understand these interactions between fields, which they call spillover effects. Precisely why this is the case is unclear, but researchers said it may have to do with how the pest control measures taken by organic farms affect the larger ecosystem. Organic fields leverage the benefits of natural enemies that reduce the number of pests on their fields, like birds and bugs that eat smaller problematic pests, according to co-author Claire Powers, a former graduate student at Bren, now pursuing her doctorate at CU Boulder. These predators and pests then venture into neighboring fields for shelter and food. Organic farmers can benefit from a greater abundance or persistence of their pest natural enemies, which can be harmed by chemical pesticides in conventional fields. Thus, organic farmers could benefit from clustering together. On the other hand, an influx of insects from organic fields could drive up the use of chemical pesticides in conventional fields, since these fields have smaller, less effective populations of those beneficial species. Unfortunately, when organic and conventional farms are distributed evenly, both kinds of farmers often lose out. Clustering organic fields concentrates the pest control benefits to organics and reduces the cost to conventional fields, according to Larson. And as the share of organic agriculture increases, the beneficial effect of organic fields on one another starts to dominate.
Since the early 2000s, researchers with the University of California have been experimenting with anaerobic soil disinfestation, or ASD, as a means to better control weeds and soil-borne pathogens in organic settings where chemical options are limited. The technique, which creates a soil environment that suppresses pathogens and weeds and makes for healthier, more robust crop growth, has been refined and improved over the years, so much so that many say it's the contributor to the renaissance of organic strawberry acreage in the state. UCCE strawberry and vegetable crop advisor Oleg Dogovich has been part of the ASD push.
Main component of ASD is a carbon source. And so our carbon sources that we use, whether it's going to be a rice bran or wheat bran, typically they go to California dairies and we feed cows with them and animals. Well, this is kind of a similar approach, actually. We're feeding microbes with them in soil. They're consuming it as a food. And because we have a plastic mulch in the soil mixed with this carbon source, there's no oxygen exchange with soil, and anaerobic species prevail. And we have pretty good guesses. I mean, it's, unless you live among those microbes yourself, you can't 100% exactly say what's going on every moment of time. But because we studied so many different components, we can kind of piece together a little bit of a story. And what it is that anaerobic conditions themselves suppress pathogens and germinating weeds. They also change pH of the soil, which is a benefit for us because our soils are very calcareous in California, especially on the coast here. And they provide nitrogen, micronutrients, and phosphorus, all the beneficial components. And so every day, every hour maybe even, so the conditions change. So all those things happen sort of not quite simultaneously, but the end result, you have the suppression of pathogens and weeds, you have better fertility. Even just augmenting our soils with the actual carbon source, it changes the structure of the soil a little bit. Our infiltration rates were documented being improved. Our EC, which is salinity measurement, also improved very slightly. You're adding organic amendment to soil just besides ASD itself. So there's a lot of different things going on in this 2 or 3 week period. But the end result, the plants love it, just like cows, right? They do really well. Their root growth is good. A lot of pathogen either, maybe it wouldn't be, say, eliminated, but suppressed quite a bit. And so that plants can take advantage of all the benefits of pH, micronutrients, phosphorus, and nitrogen in this cleaner soil environment with fewer competition from weeds. So that's been an overarching concept.
Effective ASD creates an inhospitable environment for weeds and pathogens. In organic strawberry, for example, which deal with macrofauna and nut sedge, ASD-applied fields across California have seen yields increase by 60 to 70%, and even doubling in some cases.
The effective ASD, in my opinion, has to have anaerobic conditions to approach certain amount of number of what we call anaerobic hours, cumulative hours. So there's a sort of a threshold in the early days of ASD research we designed as 100,000 for suppression of verticillium wilt. We had excellent suppression. So that was sort of a benchmark. And it's sort of different. They can be different for different pathogens, maybe even different weed species as well. But it gives an indication that it's succeeding well. Of course, you can also smell it. That's a simple way to see, you know, it's working. But once you accomplish this, we've seen very good suppression of Macrophomina fasciolina, charcoal rot pathogen, which is a big problem for us in strawberry. And it can work not just by itself, it has to combine it with other methods. For example, or just a big picture crop management. For example, in summer berries, if you can do it effectively, and if you have maybe some survivorship, the disease progression is so slow in the winter. So if you can get a clean environment for roots to begin, the plants can establish and grow well. By the time the pathogen starts interacting with plant, the temperatures drop in the winter time, and disease doesn't develop. So you can kind of align this technology with other tools and other considerations to make it even more effective if you place it in the right place in the right time. And so there's no silver bullet approach. I think we all realize it's with every method, since we moved away from ethyl bromide, this hasn't been a perfect solution to the fumigating soil or disinfecting soil for that matter. They're all either cumbersome or expensive or a combination of both. They have to fit in the long-term management. And I think ASD can fit pretty well here in the southern soils for us. If you want to talk about recent results, we had some pretty good results in the last couple of years with a yellow nutsedge control. But the similarity, if I may, so it's a really key concept. When the treatment is there, it's effective, but as soon as you remove it, When you start ASD, it can be effective. When you stop it, which means aerating the soil, that's when the process stops. And during this period, you have efficacy. It's the same, say, applying steam. When you're applying steam, it's working. As soon as the soil cools down, it doesn't have any residual effect. Same with fumigant. When fumigant is there, it's killing germinated weeds, it's killing sclerotia, it's killing pathogens. As soon as you remove it, whatever comes next, you don't have much control of. So it's the same thing. It's a period of small time we can apply this and get as much as we can out of this process and then hopefully integrate it with something else.
UCCE researchers are still doing work to make ASD a more effective and economic practice for growers.
It's not surprising the cost of doing ASD, the cost of the carbon source, the cost of transportation of carbon source been going up. And because of that, it doesn't surprise that growers always complain of higher cost of every input. And it's correct, exactly right. We have to find ways to do it more economically. And then for that, we look for what we call alternatives to rice bran, something that we can use as effectively as rice bran, but hopefully cheaper. And that's a continuous process. You know, over the years, we tried a variety of different things, and it has to work well. It has to be easy, economical. I can give you some examples, things that didn't work. It's a continuous trial and error thing. And with mids or with middlings, we had really good results and a little bit cheaper than rice bran. And they produced more locally in Southern California and Bakersfield and San Bernardino in the milling plant. So we're trying to cut costs both on transportation and actual source itself. So it's going to continue on. And maybe it's going to be a different product for different regions. If you find something local, you don't have to transport long distances. Great. Let's make it work.
You're listening to My Ag Life. I'm Taylor Jahlstrom.
While groups are clamoring for certainty on how the Department of Treasury calculates tax credits for sustainable aviation fuel, USDA Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack said the adjustments to the greenhouse gas model, or GREET model, won't be completed until next month, but will send the right signal to both farmers and biofuels producers. Yet the farm practice is eventually recognized by the Treasury Department for the sustainable aviation fuel 40B tax credit may need to be broadened to help provide more benefits to biofuel producers and farmers under the Clean Fuel Production 45Z tax credits, according to Vilsack. GREET stands for Greenhouse Gases, Regulated Emissions, and Energy Use and Technologies, and the administration has been retooling the life cycle analysis to be used by the Treasury Department to detail how sustainable aviation fuels will qualify for both tax credits. A group of 26 farm and biofuel organizations from 13 states have written a letter to Biden administration officials expressing disappointment that the federal agencies missed their own self-imposed deadline to update the GREET model, but the letter says they appreciate the importance of getting the modeling right. The groups warned officials against changing the GREET model that would stack unwarranted penalties on ag feedstocks, cut rural America out of a promising green energy market, and undermine any realistic path to achieving U.S. SAF goals. Experts told the House Ag Committee recently that China remains the top global threat to U.S. agriculture, despite billions of U.S. export sales to China. South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem says China wants to control the U.S. food supply.
They have decades ago started buying our fertilizer companies. Then I watched them buy up our chemical companies. I watched us as we sold citizenship to members of the Communist Party for investment into our processing systems. And now most of our processing facilities are owned by the Communist Party or Chinese government. Now they are coming for our land.
An Indiana farmer and former U.S. ambassador to the U.N. Food and Agriculture Organization concurs, saying that China is undermining the U.S. farmer. A multi-state coalition of biofuel and farm advocates asked the Treasury Department to swiftly resolve any questions standing in the way of scaling up U.S. production of sustainable aviation fuel. More specifically, they urge the administration to quickly adopt the U.S. Department of Energy's GREET model for calculating SAF tax credits under the Inflation Reduction Act. That would complete a process that was supposed to conclude by March 1st. They are disappointed the administration didn't fulfill its commitment to release a modified GREET model by March 1st, but they appreciate the importance of getting the modeling right, according to 26 organizations. At the same time, they caution against contradictory changes to GREET that would stack unwarranted penalties on agricultural feedstocks, cut rural America out of a promising green energy market, and undermine any path to achieving SAF goals. Groups in a coalition include Clean Fuels Alliance America, Growth Energy, and many others. USDA Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack says USDA will need a little bigger budget next year. USDA Ag News reporter Gary Crawford.
We have four basic tools in doing the job that you all have outlined to us.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack telling the House Ag Appropriations Subcommittee hearing Thursday that those tools include the Farm Bill, the use of Commodity Credit Corporation funding, the conservation resources in the Inflation Reduction Act,
and of course the budget that allows us to fund not only programs, but as importantly, the people that administer the programs, the facilities necessary to administer the programs, and the IT necessary to do a job efficiently.
To that end, Vilsack said for the upcoming 2025 fiscal year that starts October 1st, the administration's asking Congress for a USDA budget of $24.5 billion, $2.3 billion more than the current year, or about an 11% increase. Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Over 30 agriculture groups released the 8th Annual Feeding the Economy report. The study helps estimate the direct and indirect economic contributions of the food and agriculture industry on jobs, wages, economic output, and business taxes. The 2024 report's findings show the total economic impact for the food and agriculturally related industries grew almost 12% over the past year and reached $9.63 trillion. That's 20% of the total U.S. output. Total jobs in the industry reached more than 48 million. Total wages were $2.7 trillion, up 34% since the 2020 report. Total taxes were $1.25 trillion, up 37% since the 2020 report. Total exports of $181.6 billion were down 3% since 2020. From the 2020 report until now, food and agriculture manufacturing jobs grew at a faster rate than any other job category in America. Agricultural production now accounts for 20% of all U.S. manufacturing jobs.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing team, thank you for listening.